Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Warden. My guest today is Giusy Moretti. Giusy's family winery is in the Montefalco region of Umbria. It's called Moretti Omero.
Yes.
Why the name Moretti Omero? Who was Omero Moretti?
Omero is my father, and in the area it's quite normal to have an unusual name. In fact, Omero is an ancient Greek poet.
Really?
Yes. And so my name is Giusy, very normal name, because my grandfather was named Giuseppe. It's a Catholic name. But after the Second World War, a lot of people had a not Catholic name, because of the resistance.
Okay.
So that's why.
So tell us a little bit about your family estate. How big is your vineyard and whereabouts is it in the Montefalco area? Which comune are you in? Which village are you in?
We are in Giano dell'Umbria. That is the highest one in sea level, I mean.
The highest village in the Montefalco area?
Yes.
So how high?
We are at 540
meters.
But not all
540
our
meters.
Meters.
That's pretty high.
Not all our vines are at that level. Medium level is 400.
That's still quite high though, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
So is it easy to ripen the Sacramentino there? It's quite a hard grape to get ripe, isn't it, sometimes?
Well, the sugar is pretty high, usually.
Okay.
But the problem are tannins. So we have a lot of work to do, especially because Sacramentino vines produce a lot of leaves, and in organic farming we have to have the grape very clean without leaves to permit the copper and the sulfur to be spread on the grapes.
How big is your vineyard?
We have got 13, very difficult.
13 hectares?
13 hectares. And
that's vineyards. And you have olives as well?
Yes.
How many
16
olives?
16 olives.
16 growth. Trees or 16 hectares?
16 hectares.
Yeah, 16 trees isn't going
yes,
to get you very
than.
Far. And do you have any other crops, cereal crops or animals?
No, we are specialized on vineyards and on olive grove.
So all your estate is in just one place? You don't have vines in different villages, or do you?
In this part of Umbria, our property is very divided into pieces because we bought some fields each year by year.
Does that make organic farming difficult? If you have neighbors that are spraying things that are not allowed in organics, does that make it tricky?
Yes, it's very, very tricky because Sacramentino is a late harvest one, and it produces a lot of leaves. So we have to cut the leaves 5 times or also 6 times per vintage. That means a lot of work. That is good because you can stay outside a lot of hours. But then you have to make all the job in the office. So
okay, so
it's pretty hard.
What you're saying with organic, especially with Sacramentino, it's prevention rather than cure. To avoid disease, you've got to go out there and make sure that around the grape bunches, you have to pluck away some leaves to make sure that the bunches A, ripen and get some sun, and they get the airflow they need to stay healthy.
Correct.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your family.
My family is a very, very funny one.
You said it.
The capo famiglia, the boss, is my grandma.
Okay.
She's from Montefalco.
What's her name?
Quinta.
Quinta?
That is the fifth.
She was the fifth
it
in her family.
Because she was the fifth daughter.
How many other children, family. How many other brothers and sisters did she have?
7.
Okay.
7.
Contraception obviously wasn't a big issue in those days. I'm joking.
No. Before, no. But because they need some people to help them to cultivate it, vines. They used to have Sacramentino. The family of my grandfather, not really, because they were not specialized, so they put together Malvasia, Grechetto, all together. My grandma's family used to give the grapes to Scacciadiavoli.
Another winery. So you used to sell the grapes to Scacciadiavoli?
She used to sell grapes to Scacciadiavoli because Scacciadiavoli was the bigger one, and they used to call the Cantinone, the big cantina.
Okay.
For all
right.
The people.
In terms of the Sacramentino, so apart from Sacramentino, what else do you make? Which other wines do you make?
We make also Grechetto, mm-hmm. that is the mostly cultivated variety in Umbria, more than Sangiovese.
So you make, that as a dry white wine?
Yes, as a fresh one.
And what are the typical flavors of Grechetto?
The final almond taste.
Nutty. So Grechetto, Sagrantino.
And also Spoletino. That is a grape that was cultivated also in the past here in the area. It's named after the municipality of Spoleto, very close from here. And we produced a method classico with Spoletino grape.
A classic method sparkling wine.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the flavors of the Spoletino?
Spoletino
is a dry white wine.
Pretty aromatic wine. And it has got a late ripening. Such as Sagrantino, so it's pretty hard to have until mid-October two of our best grapes still on the vines.
Is that very...
It's pretty stressing for us.
So with these two late ripening grapes, the Spoletino for white wine and the Sagrantino for red wine, you say both are quite vigorous, they produce quite a lot of leaves. How do you make sure that the bunches stay healthy?
We ensure that the grapes arrive very healthy at our cantina, cutting off the leaves. And it is very important, and we repeat this work, this job, 5-6 times per year.
So when you say taking away leaves, where are you taking the leaves from? From the top of the vine or the bottom of the vine?
From the bottom, where the grapes are placed.
So you're getting a lot of airflow through there by taking these leaves away.
Yes.
Prevention rather than cure. Obviously, Umbria is very well known as a tourist region. Do you do direct sale? Do people come to your winery and say, oh, we really want to try your wine because you're organic? Or they just come to your winery and say, we just want to buy a bottle of wine because we're in Umbria and we want to take something home?
Usually, they come in our cantina because they taste it in a restaurant and they really enjoyed the wine, so they visit us. But some of them, they book before the guided tour, and we are pretty well known also for cooking lessons.
Oh, you have a cooking school?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that sounds
me
good.
And my grandma.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. And you can see in our website some recipes. We tape it air while she's cooking because we want to preserve the way of making pasta, because it's an ability that probably will be lost.
So how does your grandmother make pasta? What makes it...
Exceptionally, in an exceptional way.
Go on, explain. What is the classic way of making pasta? What are the ingredients for pasta, first of all?
In the past, they used to put also wine in the dough.
In the dough?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
But how do you make the dough? Just let's keep it. How do you make the dough, first of all?
So you put the flour on the table. You make a sort of crater.
Make a little
crater.
So you make a mound of flour.
A mountain of flour with a hole.
And then a little like a crater in the top.
Yes.
And
you put eggs. If you have...
So eggs, when you say eggs, the yellow of the egg or the white of the egg or the whole egg?
No, the whole egg.
The whole egg, okay.
Yes. And if you have vegan people at your table, don't say that you put eggs. I'm saying it because we have been making also vegan class, because probably you don't expect it, but Umbrian cucina is traditionally vegan. Because
really?
In the past, they don't have so many money to afford having so much meat.
Really?
In
so
table.
Traditionally, it's a lack of money, poverty meant meat was seen as a real luxury.
Yes.
So how do you make the pasta?
Flour, eggs and water.
So you start with the flour?
Yes. You put... not me.
You never seen me cook.
We are teachers.
you need several teachers for me, I think.
You can repeat easily.
The whole team,
it's a
coachload of them.
You put the flour in a table with a shape of a mountain.
A little hill of flour, yeah.
Yes, and then you make an hole. It would be similar to a crater.
A crater, yeah.
You break the eggs and you put inside the crater.
To the white and the yellow.
Yes, and then you take the fork and you make a vortex of flour and eggs and move again.
So you mix them together.
Then you put water, but it has to be warm water, not hot and not cold. And you mix together
with the back of your hand.
Correctly, that's the secret.
So you just you keep mixing together. For how long roughly does it take for everything to combine?
Depending on the strength of your hands. For my grandma, you need just 1 minute.
And for you?
For the rest of the people, 5 minutes.
Okay.
Even if she's 84, she's got a lot of strength.
So then when it's mixed together, then you shape the dough into the pasta that you're making. What is a traditional shape of pasta in Umbria, in this part of Umbria?
The traditional shape of pasta is a square section.
Square?
Yes.
Is it a flat square then?
Yes.
It's almost like you're making ravioli then, isn't it?
Because the flattened dough has to be about...
1 centimetre thick.
Half centimetre.
Half a centimetre thick.
And then you have to cut half a centimetre too.
Oh, you cut them in half, lengthways.
Yes.
Ah, and then when you put the pasta in the water to cook it, how many minutes would that normally take to cook?
Not so much time. You don't need so much time because it's already cooked, because it's just flour and water and some wine, so just 3 minutes.
So which sauce would go on top of that? I know you talk about vegetarianism, but would it be a meat sauce or a vegetarian sauce? What would two options be for the sauce on the top of the pasta?
Usually when you put wine instead of water in it, that is the traditional recipe, you put just tomato with onion.
So that is vegetarian. And but other choices would be?
You can also make a ragu made of rabbit.
Rabbit meat, yeah.
And usually we put also some sausages, as usual.
With tomato as well, though?
Yes, with tomato and sausages.
But sausages ground sausage meat, quite small, not huge pieces of sausage.
Grounded pieces of sausages. And my mum, she put on top of everything sausages.
Really?
Yes.
She a big lady?
Yes, yeah. She is. Definitely, she is. She puts on everything. She would like to put also on breakfast time.
Well, she should live in England.
Yeah, probably.
You know, sausages, eggs and bacon for breakfast.
She'd
be very happy, yeah. How easy is it being an organic winery in Umbria? We always think of Umbria as the green heart of Italy. It can be quite wet. Is it easy or difficult, seeing as that you've got these vigorous varieties, these quite leafy varieties in Sagrantino and Grechetto?
It's pretty difficult. In fact, for us, the best vintages were the 2015 and the 2017, because we had the occasion to have very healthy grapes without working so much.
Yeah.
Makes sense, no? Because they were very sunny vintages and we had no problems, very big bunches and without any diseases.
You're obviously a fairly historic organic estate here from the early 1990s. Is there a lot of communication between the organic growers in this part of Umbria, or do you just, everybody just does their own thing? Do you collaborate with each other? Are you friendly with each other?
Yes, yes, a lot.
Why does that help?
It helps a lot. And Consorzio Tutela Vini Montefalco.
So the Montefalco Growers Group organization.
Made a tutoring about the pruning, and also we collaborate all together recording the temperature levels with some meteo station together with the Consorzio Tutela Vini Montefalco.
When did that project start? Whose idea was that? Was that the growers? Did the growers get together and say, listen, it would really make sense if we all collected information about, you know, climate data, rainfall, sunshine hours, and shared the data? Whose idea was that?
Everybody together.
So that's quite unusual. We always think it's a very stereotypical view, but, you know, Italians are very individualistic. They don't really collaborate with each other. But you're saying absolutely not the case in Montefalco. You are working as a team. You're individuals, but you're working as a team.
Yes.
And is organics growing here? Are more wineries going organic or not?
We were the first one, but nowadays there are about 5-6 organic farming, because nowadays it's easy to be an organic cantina.
Why?
Because the customers understand the value of making this incredible and very hard job on the vines. But before, in the beginning, I used to go at the fairs with my father, and we had to not say that it was organic.
So you had to keep it a secret?
Yes.
Why?
Because there were lots of prejudices about organic wine.
Lots of prejudice.
All the people used to think that it was no good because it was organically made.
And
now it's the reverse. it's fancy to be an organic farmer.
Fancy, that's a nice word. So is that also a bit disappointing if people come to your winery and say, look, I don't care what it tastes like, it's organic and I know I can sell it because it's organic or biodynamic, because that's the trend now, like especially sommeliers and influencers want organic and biodynamic. Would you rather just people come to your winery and say, Moretti Omero, they make great wine, I'm going to buy a bottle? Would you prefer that? Or are you very proud to be organic?
I am such proud of being an organic farmer, so I feel very good when people come and say, even if the vintage is not perfect, I really appreciate the work you made with your father, with your sister, with your mother, and I will buy it even if it's not perfect, because we are obsessed by keeping the parfums of the grape, by keeping the best way of making the wine, not about the perfection of the wine.
Okay, so slight imperfection is okay.
Yes.
So what about the social aspect of organic? Do you have more, because you're organic, do you have more employees? Do you spend more money?
Yes.
How much more expensive is it for you to be organic in the vineyard? 20% more?
Even more, because if you are a conventional winemaker, you can put some products on the vines and they will resist for a month. If you are in the organic winemaking, you have to work more and more. So we have some employees. We have workers from Macedonia. They have a cooperative. They work all together. They are about 15 people coming all together. So it's very fantastic for us, because in one day they make a nectar.
And what are they doing? They're taking leaves away to make to give the grapes, the bunches, a bit more sunlight and air to prevent disease?
Yes.
So they're quite skilled?
Yes.
And they're very, and you say they're quick as well?
Very quick, and it's very good for us.
What about wildlife? Have you noticed, what kind of wildlife do you have? Do you have caprioli here, Bambi, roebuck? Do you have,
perfect Bambi to Bambi. Be cooked.
Yeah, you prefer to eat Bambi, yeah, because they can be a bit of a pain, Bambi, when she comes in and eats all the grapes and the buds in the early spring. What about wild boar? You have wild boar?
Yes.
Are they a real problem?
Yes, they are.
Until they end up on your grandmother's kitchen.
Yes.
And then they're not so much of a problem.
We have also a lot of wolves.
Wolves? Really?
Yes, yes, yes.
So what are your main markets for your Sagrantino?
Our main market is North Europe and Central Europe, more than the States.
So about two areas that we would say can be quite cold. Do clients in those two areas take the wines because Sagrantino has got a big warming wine? Is that the reason why?
Yes.
So they're not afraid of a red wine that's quite forthright and quite tannic?
Correct, because they have very dark days and they need something to be...
God, these poor people. Oh dear, how can they live in these countries? But, you know, staying alive with a glass of Sagrantino. You know, they get rationed
every day. It's the sun. It's the sun for them. We export the sunshine in bottles.
Yeah, well, that's a good strap line for a Sagrantino tourist. If Moretti Omero never works out, if something terrible happens, then you could always work for the PR department. You know, glass of sunshine, that's a good line.
Yeah.
Okay, right, let's talk about your sparkling wine. What do you, your classic method sparkling wine, what is that made from?
It is made from Spoletino grape, and it is a 30 months on the lease one, and it was a desire from me, because I was intended to enter in my father cantina, but it's pretty difficult to collaborate father and daughter, and so we tried with a neutral wine. I mean, Sagrantino is pretty traditional one, and there were no way to be into this production,
so
we decided to do together something new. In that way I can enter my father's way of making wine.
So you're saying you're making a sparkling wine which is white from red grapes from Sagrantino?
From Spoletino.
Okay, did you want to make one from Sagrantino?
Not really, because from in the Sagrantino skin there are a lot of pruin, and I know that the pruin ruins the bubbles.
The pruin, which is the white film around on the grapes?
Yes.
Why does that ruin the bubbles?
Because it's fatty.
Okay.
And it's not good. It will be so difficult to make Mezzo Classico from Sagrantino grape.
So you make it from a white wine grape instead?
Yes.
And how dry is it? I mean, how much sugar, how much residual sugar does it contain? Technical question, but...
It's 9 grams per liter because we don't add any
dosage
sugar in the liqueur d'expedition.
And how long does it stay on the lees normally in bottle before you disgorge it?
30 months.
That's
on
quite
the
long,
lees.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Why do you leave it so long on the lees?
Because we want the best quality that we can do.
Okay, and what does that add, that aging, extra aging? Does it make it more creamy tasting?
Exactly, creamy bubbles, and also the parfums will be more and more refined.
So which perfumes are you getting, apart from obvious kind of buttery, biscuity flavours? What else are you getting in there?
Also the floral part of the Spoletino grape.
Okay, so if you have a sparkling Spoletino, your traditional method Spoletino, and you have a just a normal, still, dry Spoletino, can you see, if you smell them both, are you going to have similar smells, or does the fact that the champagne style, sorry, the traditional method style, has been aged on the lees, are they very, very different, or can you see that they're the same origin?
You can recognize the fruity notes, the same ones.
Which are, what fruity notes are they?
They are, for to be an Umbria wine, they are pretty yellow fruits, such as peach, very ripened.
Ripe peach, yeah.
But the rest is pretty different because the lees are very invasive to the parfum, and so they change. They make tertiarization of
tertiary aromas. So what would you, if you're having a sparkling wine, normally people drink it on its own, but if I'm in the kitchen with your grandmother, what dish would she make for a sparkling wine, for your sparkling wine, your sparklings?
Unfortunately, she doesn't drink any white wine. She thinks that white wines are not good.
Okay.
Because she's from Montefalco and she cannot drink any white wines. For my father, she was a terrible mother.
Okay.
I mean, she's
this is all
always...
being recorded, you know that, don't you?
But it's the truth. She's always demanding a better quality on red wines.
Right.
So the only answer for my father was concentrated him into white wines, because she doesn't drink any white wines.
So basically, because she doesn't drink white wine, he has a bit of peace, yeah?
Yes.
Because she doesn't drink that. You know, I think we should forget the podcast. I need to make a TV documentary on your family.
Yes, why not?
I think there's a lot of material there that
yes.
we could be looking at, like a fly on the wall,
yes.
You know, like a 12-month show. It'd be great.
Please come with a psychologist.
Yeah. We need two, one for the production team and one for the family.
Yes, that's better.
So are you positive about the future for Sagrantino?
Yes.
10 years ago it was seen as a very tough wine, even 20 years ago, very tough, almost unsellable wine. Now it's really in fashion. There's a real boom of new blood here, money coming in, people establishing wineries. Do you see that as a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a very good thing.
Why?
To have people from North Italy coming here and founding new winery, and it's also very good to have young winemakers that are helping the denomination Montefalco to be more and more famous, because the more you are young, the more possibility you have to be in the global market and to be...
That's okay. And so what is the percentage of wine that you sell directly from your winery? You have, presume you have tourists that people can come and buy. And how much do you, and what is the percentage that you export?
The export is the 40% of the production.
So when people come to Umbria and they, maybe as tourists and they are on a tourist trip and they don't know much about wine, when they taste Sagrantino for the first time in your winery, what is their normal reaction? If they don't have any preconceptions, you know, we're in the wine trade, oh, it's really tannic, blah, blah, blah. Just a normal regular couple come in and say, oh, can we try you? We see you make a red wine. We've never heard of Sagrantino. Don't know what it is. Can we try a glass, please? What do they say? What's their first impression normally?
They really love Sagrantino at the nose because it's very clean and very straight. You can recognize very easily the red berries on it. So people really love this kind of style, very fresh and very genuine one.
And when they taste it?
And then when they taste, they say, I never tasted a wine like this.
So when they say that, what do they mean? Something that's very, has a strong personality?
It has got a strong personality on the mouth and it is unique. So you absolutely have to try it once in your life.
But are they happy though? Do they say, well, we need to buy a bottle of that, because we've never tried anything like that before? Do they think, oh, that Sagrantino is not for me?
Usually they bring some bottle at home and they became ambassador of Sagrantino. They want also the friend to taste Sagrantino.
Which is great. I mean, that just shows sometimes how, you know, if you read articles on Sagrantino, every time I get asked to write an article on something, you know, the editor will always say, oh, you must mention, you know, the fact that it's very tannic and da-da-da. And you think, why don't we just talk about, it's a very individualistic red wine. Let's not talk about things that are going to give, not a negative image, but start with something positive rather than something that's not positive.
Not positive, yeah. Yeah. They should...
You know, it's like if you said every time you write an article on Chardonnay, you have to say it's a really boring grape. Chardonnay is a really boring grape, but in Burgundy they make quite a Chardonnay. You would never do that, would you?
No.
You wouldn't?
No.
You know, but you kind of get, oh my God, anyway. So, right, so, okay, I just want to say thanks to Giusy Moretti from the Moretti Omero Winery in the Montefalco region in Umbria. It's a historic winery, very family oriented, organic farming, and a fantastic cooking school. Definitely worth a visit.
Grazie, grazie.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.